You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, May 21st, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you here. And we've got plenty to talk about on today's show. Coming up on this program, we're going to be digging deep into what's happening in the state of Idaho, and namely how we are collecting signatures for the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act. And there's a very interesting story on how we've started to collect signatures now at the pot shops in Ontario, Oregon, the ones that they tried to ban us from collecting at. So that's coming up here in the rest of this first hour. Also, we'll tell you all about how the South has overtaken Idaho as being more progressive on marijuana. That's right. Idaho is to the right of the South, the Confederacy, on marijuana policy. Kind of hard to believe, but maybe not so hard to believe. Also, to finish up this hour, we will be talking about sex. Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about sex, because not only is smoking weed illegal in the state of Idaho, there are certain things you can't do with other adults in the state of Idaho as well, sexually speaking. And it's kind of an interesting contrast from how the laws used to be. Idaho's kind of done a 180 on this, so we'll tell you all about that coming up in Behind the Headlines. We'll start things out, of course, with the cannabis headline news. And in the news, of course, we lost one southern state's medical marijuana, and we gained another southern state's medical marijuana. So we'll tell you which ones coming up in the cannabis headline news. And then in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, we're going to take a deep look at what's happening with our opponents, the prohibitionists, the folks from the Idaho Office of Drug Policy and the nonprofit group Drug Free Idaho. They have all sorts of sheets and position papers and reports that they've been distributing to Idaho legislators. And it gives you some idea why these legislators are so anti-marijuana. So we'll take a look at some of their fact sheets, some of the ways that they are mischaracterizing marijuana and marijuana users, especially in the workplace. We'll also look at how there are going to be more pot shops on Idaho's border starting January 1st, as Montana is ramping up its marijuana legalization. We'll tell you if you were going to invest in a property, we'll tell you where to invest in the state of Montana if you want to reap some of those sweet Idaho marijuana dollars. Also, we will talk about why there's never a call to ban alcohol in the state of Idaho, even when there's a tragic DUI like what took place in Eagle, Idaho this week. We'll get into the statistics on Idaho and alcohol in hour two. Also, taking a look at some of the other states and what's happening in criminal justice, a terrible decision from the Supreme Court of the United States, which decided that the convictions from non-unanimous juries, a relic of the Jim Crow era, would be allowed to stand. Because having to try all those people all over again, gosh, it would just be difficult. So they just get to sit in jail. Also, we are taking a look at Wyoming, another neighboring state, where Liz Cheney used to be the number three Republican in the U.S. House. She lost her position of power because she wouldn't sign on to the big lie about Trump and the stolen 2020 election. And now she is being primaried in the state of Wyoming by a guy who, you know, speaking of sex earlier in the introduction here, has a little bit of a sexual problem himself that we'll need to talk about. And we'll talk about Louisiana, where a cop there discussing marijuana legalization actually said the quiet part out loud. And we'll tell you what that is. And we'll explain how you can't kill the black market if you're going to keep asking us to raise taxes, increase regulations, and increase packaging. All that coming up in the next 2 hours on the Russ Belville Show. But first, let's start you off with the Cannabis Headline Newsweek.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalruss. With your cannabis headline news for the week ending Friday, May 21st, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. A voter-approved initiative to legalize medical marijuana in Mississippi has been overturned by the state Supreme Court. On Friday, the court ruled in favor of a Mississippi mayor who filed a legal challenge against the 2020 measure, nullifying its certification by the Secretary of State. The lawsuit was unrelated to the merits of the reform proposal itself, but plaintiffs argued that the constitutional amendment violated procedural rules for placing measures on the ballot. The case cites a state law stipulating that signatures of the qualified electors from any congressional district shall not exceed one-fifth of the total number of signatures required to qualify an initiative petition for placement upon the ballot. But that policy went into effect when Mississippi had 5 congressional districts, and that's since been reduced to 4, making it mathematically impossible to adhere to. In the court's 6-3 ruling on Friday, the justices said that their hands were tied. The legislature or administration might be able to fix the procedural ballot issue, but it had to follow the letter of the law. A strong majority opposed last week's Mississippi State Supreme Court decision striking down both a voter initiative that approved medical marijuana and the entire process that Mississippians can gather signatures to place an issue on the ballot for voters to decide. The poll also found strong support for Governor Tate Reeves calling a special session to give legislators the opportunity to reverse the actions of the Supreme Court. The poll found almost 60.9% of respondents oppose the Supreme Court decision, while 22.3% support it. In addition, 59.6% support the governor calling a special session on medical marijuana, while 20.2% oppose such an effort. The governor of Alabama on Monday signed a bill to legalize medical marijuana in the state that was sent to her desk earlier this month. Under the legislation as approved, patients would have to be diagnosed with one of about 20 conditions, including anxiety, depression, sleep disorders, PTSD, and intractable pain. Regulators would not be able to independently add additional conditions, leaving that decision up to lawmakers in future sessions. The bill also prohibits raw cannabis, smoking, vaping, and candy or baked good products. Patients would instead be allowed to purchase capsules, lozenges, oils, suppositories, and topical patches. For physicians to be able to recommend cannabis to patients, they would have to complete a 4-hour continuing education course and pass an exam. The course would cost upwards of $500, and doctors would also be required to take refresher classes every 2 years. The Louisiana House rejected a bill Tuesday that would have taxed recreational marijuana if the state ever legalized it. The decision on the tax bill likely dooms the prospect of legalized marijuana in the state this year. It also likely dooms the approval of legalized weed next year, since tax bills cannot be brought up in 2022, as it is not a fiscal session then. The bill needs 2/3 of the House, or 70 votes, for approval. The vote was 47 in favor and 48 against. It would have taxed the sale of marijuana at 50%, with half of that going to the state's general fund and the other half to local governments. 20% of the local share would have gone to law enforcement. Just a day after a bill to legalize marijuana in Louisiana stalled in the state legislature, Governor John Bel Edwards said on his live radio program Wednesday that cannabis legalization, quote, is going to happen in Louisiana eventually, end quote.
In the past, as a legislator and as governor, I've been opposed to legalizing recreational marijuana. I will tell you, I have come to believe that it is going to happen in Louisiana eventually. And one of the things that I've always said is that before we do it here, we need to make sure we study and learn all the lessons to be learned in those states that have legalized marijuana.
Edwards stressed that while he isn't yet endorsing legalization, he declined to take a position on pending legislation in the House. He wants to, quote, make sure that we do it right, end quote. The 2021 legislative session in South Carolina ended last week, but the sponsor of a bill to legalize medical marijuana says he's received assurances from a top Senate leader that his measure will be taken up as the first order of business at the beginning of the next year. Senator Tom Davis, who filed the South Carolina Compassionate Care Act late last year, said that he, quote, had hoped it would be debated and voted on before we adjourned in May, end quote, after clearing the Senate Medical Affairs Committee in March. But that didn't pan out after one senator placed a hold
on the legislation. While it's a disappointment that another year has gone by without medical cannabis being enacted, Davis went on to tell FITS News that he's received a commitment from Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey that the proposal will be taken up in 2022, quote, for special order debate as the first order of business, and then lawmakers will, quote, give the bill an up or down vote, end quote. A Texas Senate committee on Wednesday unanimously approved a House-passed bill that would require the state to conduct a study into the therapeutic potential of psychedelics like psilocybin and MDMA. The move on the psychedelics proposal comes as several marijuana-related measures are also making their way through the legislature this session. On Tuesday, another Senate panel approved a House bill that would significantly lower penalties for cannabis concentrates. An additional Senate committee also advanced hemp legislation this week, but not before adding language that would severely restrict Delta-8 THC products. Meanwhile, advocates are stepping up their push in the Senate for separate House-passed bills to expand the state's medical cannabis program and broadly decriminalize marijuana possession. With less than 2 weeks left in Texas's legislative session, an effort to expand the state's medical marijuana program gained new life on Thursday after weeks of outcry from advocates who said Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was blocking the proposal. The Texas House voted 134-12 last month to send House Bill 1535 to the state Senate, where it languished in a legislative purgatory for more than 2 weeks. Patrick on Thursday referred the proposal to the Senate State Affairs Committee, but the bill still faces significant hurdles. It must advance out of committee and receive approval from the full Senate by Wednesday, the last day the Senate can take up bills. House Bill 1535 by State Representative Stephanie Click of Fort Worth would expand the state's medical cannabis program to include those with chronic pain, all cancer patients, and Texans with post-traumatic stress. This bill would also allow for medical cannabis sold in Texas to contain up to 5% tetrahydrocannabinol, the psychoactive ingredient that produces a high. Current law caps the amount of THC in medical marijuana at 0.5%. The governor of Colorado on Thursday signed a bill to double the marijuana possession limit for adults in the state, and he's directing state law enforcement to identify people with prior convictions for the new limit who he may be able to pardon. Governor Jared Polis held a signing ceremony for the legislation, which would increase the amount of cannabis a person 21 or older could lawfully carry from 1 ounce to 2 ounces. It would also require courts to approve requests to have prior records for cannabis possession sealed without consulting a district attorney, as long as the proper documentation is provided. Polis signed an executive order last year that granted clemency to almost 3,000 people convicted of possessing 1 ounce or less of marijuana. And while earlier legislation that enabled him to do that in an expedited way applied to possession cases involving up to 2 ounces, his office declined to pardon those with more than 1 ounce on their records because that amount violated existing state law. Lawmakers in Colorado have unveiled a new bill, HB 211317, that would track and limit purchase of concentrates, but falls short of mandating potency limits that had been proposed earlier. The bill would establish a new statewide tracking system to ensure that medical marijuana patients do not dispensary hop and buy their maximum allowed purchase amounts at multiple sites in the same day. It would limit concentrate purchases for medical and recreational customers to 8 grams per day, down from current 40 grams. Medical and recreational dispensaries would have to portion grams of concentrate in 10-dose packages. The bill also calls for mental health screenings prior to a medical marijuana recommendation, a requirement for 2 doctors to approve medical marijuana for adults 18, 19, and 20 years of age. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte on Tuesday signed House Bill 701, landmark legislation that implements and regulates the recreational marijuana program that voters approved in a ballot initiative last year, and funds a substance abuse prevention program that the new governor has championed since his first days in office. Under HB 701, retail sales of recreational marijuana for adults 21 and older will begin in January of next year. The half of Montana counties that voted for I-190, the ballot initiative legalizing adult-use cannabis, will have recreational sales in their borders by default, while voters in the other half of counties will have to take an affirmative action to bring recreational marijuana sales into their boundaries if so desired. Recreational pot will be taxed at 20%, while medical marijuana will retain a 5% tax. The bill also moves operation and regulation of the state's marijuana program from the Department of Public Health and Human Services to the Department of Revenue. And it creates a special drug court to handle the review and possible resentencing or expungement of past marijuana-related convictions, a key goal of criminal justice advocates for the marijuana program.
A bill to legalize marijuana in Minnesota that recently passed the House isn't advancing in the Republican-controlled Senate this session, but advocates scored a different kind of victory on Monday when it comes to expanding the state's medical cannabis program. That includes legalizing smokable forms of marijuana for registered patients. Dispensaries could also provide a curbside pickup option for patients under the proposed omnibus legislation. The report further removes restrictions for designated caregivers and allows them to tend to six registered patients at once rather than just one. Over the weekend, a bicameral conference committee approved the reform in addition to several other marijuana-related changes as part of an omnibus health bill. The House adopted that report on Monday in a 77-57 vote, and the Senate followed suit in a 66-1 vote, sending it to the governor's desk. A bill to legalize possession of psychedelics in California will advance to the Senate floor after clearing a major procedural hurdle on Thursday. The legislation, sponsored by Senator Scott Wiener, had already moved through two policy committees, but in order to make it on the floor calendar, it had to be cleared by the Senate Appropriations Committee as part of a large suspense file on a key deadline. Otherwise, it would have been dead for the session. The panel approved it on a 5-2 vote. There was no debate on the proposal. Rather, the chair simply said which of the hundreds of bills that were on the suspense file would proceed to the floor. This means the psychedelics reform measure will be taken up by the full chamber by June 4th. If it passes there, it will head to the assembly and then, potentially, to the governor's desk. If enacted into law, the bill would remove criminal penalties for possessing or sharing numerous psychedelics, including psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, ibogaine, LSD, and MDMA for adults 21 and older. An estimated 1 in 5 acres of industrial hemp planted in Indiana last year was destroyed for violating state and federal laws on its THC content. Per rules from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, if the cannabis plant has 0.3% THC or less, it's considered hemp and legal in the state of Indiana. Any higher, and it's illegal. Almost 20% of the state's hemp crop was destroyed last year for THC levels between 0.41% and 13%, according to Don Robison, seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist. Although it's hard to say for sure, his highest estimates guess this amounts to about 150 acres total. Hemp can cost as much as a dollar per seed, Robison said, meaning the cost of planting and maintaining an acre of hemp could amount to $8,000 to $12,000. Counting a loss in profit, a farmer who had to burn an acre of hemp could be out as much as $20,000. Several Michigan law firms, criminal justice groups, and cannabis reform organizations have teamed up to form the Great Lakes Expungement Network to help people expunge records under Michigan's new Clean Slate Law. The network is supported by the nonprofit Redemption Foundation, founded by the Redemption Cannabis brand, and the nonprofit Sons and Daughters United, which helps low-income, underprivileged, and minority populations. A University of Michigan law study found that individuals who expunged their records experienced a wage jump of 25%, attained better housing options, and increased employment likelihood by 11%. But that study estimated only 6.5% of those able to wipe their records did so within 5 years of eligibility due to costs and other complications. So the network aims to make expungement more accessible. A congresswoman on Thursday reintroduced a bill that would allow people living in federally assisted housing to use marijuana in compliance with state law without fear of losing their homes. As it stands, people living in public housing are prohibited from using controlled substances in those facilities regardless of state law, and landlords are able to evict such individuals. But the bill from Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton from the District of Columbia would change that. It would provide protections for people living in public housing or Section 8 housing from being displaced simply for using cannabis in states that have legalized it for medical or recreational purposes. The Drug Enforcement Administration on Friday notified several companies that it is moving toward approving their applications to becoming federally authorized marijuana manufacturers for research purposes. This is a significant development and one of the first cannabis-related moves to come out of the Biden administration. There is currently a monopoly on federal cannabis cultivation, with the University of Mississippi having operated the only approved facility for the past half century. It was almost 5 years ago that DEA under President Barack Obama first announced that it was accepting applications for additional manufacturers. No approvals were made during the Trump administration, and the delay in getting acceptances has led to frustration and, in some cases, lawsuits among applicants. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, May 21st, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show Live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio. All right, stay tuned. Coming up next, Sumter, Oregon, is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City.
That's what we were expecting. All right, coming up next, we've got our expose on who can be busted for sex in Idaho. Coming up behind the headlines. But that sound, of course, means that it's 4:20 here in the Mountain Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. Got to be safe out there, especially when you're a token in a state like Idaho, where they can still throw you in a cage for that stuff. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Coffee Pod in Sumter, Oregon, is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I do support the use of medical marijuana, and I think even there, we need to do a lot more research.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Well, today in the Cannabis Focus, we're actually not focusing on cannabis, but we are focusing on something that can happen when two people who like each other a whole lot smoke some cannabis together, and that's sex. Now, Idaho is probably the last place in the United States that you might imagine where gay sex is more legal than straight sex. But thanks to a couple of forgotten blue laws that survived an early 2000 Supreme Court decision, it's true. Straight sex can land you in jail in Idaho, but gay sex cannot. This comes from a recent story in the Idaho Statesman, and it concerned a judgment in the case of a man who, as an 18-year-old, had sex with two 16-year-old boys in Southwest Idaho. He was convicted under Idaho's former sodomy laws that criminalized gay sex, and he served 7 years in the Idaho State Penitentiary. Now, of course, this was back in the 1990s, before the landmark 2003 U.S. Supreme Court case, Lawrence v. Texas. That case invalidated sodomy laws like Idaho's on the grounds that they violate the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. The way that works is that they'd end up punishing gay people for similar conduct that's legal for straight people. And that violates due process. You can't have a law that makes one person illegal and another person legal. So, in fact, under Idaho's law at the time, and as a matter of fact, still today, if the man had had sex with two 16-year-old girls instead of two 16-year-old boys, he never would have been arrested at all. Yeah, under Idaho consent laws, they have one of those Romeo and Juliet type of laws where if you're 18 and the person younger than you is within 3 years your age, so 16 would count, then it's not illegal. And they make those kind of laws so that you're not criminalizing, you know, a high school relationship or something like that, right? So he was busted back in the 90s for sex with two boys, but they were of the age that if they were girls, it would have been perfectly legal, right? And again, this was before the 2003 case that invalidated sodomy laws. So the gist of this case was that he was being required by the state of Montana to register as a sex offender because he was convicted under that Idaho sodomy law. And he complained that this registration, of course, kills his chance of getting a home and a job. And the judge agreed and ordered Montana to expunge his records and end his registration. The judge wrote, quote, "None of the governmental interests in maintaining a sexual offender registry are served by this man's inclusion. Engagement in intimate sexual contact with a person of the same sex, without more, cannot be said to render someone a threat to public safety." So when I read this story, it shocked me because I knew Idaho was one of those states that had a sodomy law that got overturned by Lawrence v. Texas. But I hadn't considered that people's prior records for sodomy convictions would still exist. And it's kind of like the situation that we've got with marijuana right now, where, you know, we're legalizing marijuana in all these states, but we're not necessarily in all of them expunging the records of the people who got busted for something that is now legal. And of course, we're seeing that disproportionately among black and brown men who have to serve prison sentences or stay on parole or probation and keep a criminal record that, like a sex offender registry, harms your chances of getting a home or a job. So I figured when I saw this thing, I would look up the Idaho law, the former law that had criminalized sodomy, and I couldn't find it because, of course, after Lawrence v. Texas, it was stricken from the law books. But before I could go back to the Internet Archive and try to find out, you know, an old copy and maybe see what it said, I was looking under Idaho code and fornication caught my eye. Well, as fornication often will, right? Specifically, the Idaho Code on Fornication, which is section 18-6603, any unmarried person who shall have sexual intercourse with an unmarried person of the opposite sex shall be guilty of fornication, and upon conviction thereof, shall be punished by a fine of not more than $300, or by imprisonment for not more than 6 months, or by such fine and imprisonment, provided that the sentence imposed or any part thereof may be suspended with or without probation in the discretion of the court. So you got that? Two unmarried people who are of the opposite sex. That's the crime of fornication in the state of Idaho. You can get a $300 fine and 6 months in jail for it. And if I'm reading it correctly, that means Idaho has completely flip-flopped from its sexually discriminatory laws of the 1990s that got this one guy busted. Because if the 18-year-old man now has sex with two 16-year-old boys, it's legal. But if he has sex with two 16-year-old girls, well, that would be fornication if they're not both married, and thus a crime. But only if the man and the girls are unmarried, because if someone is married, then in Idaho, you've committed the crime of adultery. That's right. Idaho Code 18-6601 still has a crime for adultery. A married man who has sexual intercourse with a woman, not his wife, an unmarried man who has sexual intercourse with a married woman who has sexual intercourse with a man, not her husband, and an unmarried woman who has sexual intercourse with a married man, that sounds like a hell of a party, shall be guilty of adultery and shall be punished by a fine of not less than $100. Or by imprisonment in the county jail for not less than 3 months, or by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period not exceeding 3 years, or in the county jail for a period not exceeding 1 year, or by a fine not exceeding $1,000. Do you catch all that? It's kind of interesting to me because the fine for fornication is at most $300, but the fine for adultery is a mandatory minimum $100 fine, could be as high as a $1,000 fine. The jail sentence for fornication is 6 months, but the sentence for adultery is a mandatory minimum 3 months and up to 3 years. But again, only if you're straight. See, nothing in that fornication or adultery statute I just read to you would punish gay sex. And since the 2015 U.S. Supreme Court of Obergefell v. Hodges, gay people can get married in Idaho just like straight people, but only straight people can be punished for adultery. Since Lawrence v. Texas, gay sex of any kind in Idaho, married or unmarried, can't be punished. So, only straight people can be punished for fornication, and only straight people can be punished for adultery. Well, now, obviously, the fornication and adultery statutes wouldn't withstand much of a legal challenge, right? Because they'd have the same problem as the Lawrence v. Texas with having the due process. It's not a due process thing. You can't punish straight people for something you're not punishing gay people for. So it wouldn't stand up in court. And it's not like Idaho cops have been busting people for this. I mean, these laws only target straight people, so not like they're going to be enforced anytime soon, right? And since there's really no victims in these crimes of fornication and adultery, there's really no popular movement to change these laws. Unless we start one. What do you say? Who's with me to start a new campaign? IHAFLO, the Idaho Heterosexual Adultery and Fornication Legalization Organization. There we go. IHAFLO. What do we want? Adultery and fornication. Who's it for? Straight people. Alright, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll tell you all about collecting signatures for the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act in the state of Oregon because the Senate dared us to. Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss. Or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of Hour 2 of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter. And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalruss and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today. Welcome back, everybody. Just half past the hour, 34 past the hour here. And I've been having some fun these past few days, and I want to tell you all about it. It's one of my most rewarding activism events ever, come to think of it. And it has to do with something that started way, way back in January. Let's see if we can get this clip to play.
I taught school for 35 years, and I saw the lives of children be impacted so dramatically by parental use of drugs, family members' use of drugs, domestic violence, even given the kids drugs to keep them calm and quiet. And I followed some of those kids throughout the years and have seen how their lives have not been successful. And as an educator, I feel like the most important thing we can do as a society is to keep our most precious resource, our children, give them the opportunities that they can attain and become the very best they possibly can be.
So that's State Senator Patty Ann Lodge. She's the chair of the Senate State Affairs Committee, and that was her testimony back in January when they were first trying to pass some constitutional amendments to make marijuana petitions impossible. They are so terrified that we get something on the ballot, they know it will pass. They actually tried two different ways to put marijuana prohibition into the state constitution where it would be impossible to run an initiative to legalize it. Now, both of those efforts failed, but that wasn't the end of Patty Ann Lodge trying to stop us from passing a marijuana initiative. It came about a couple of months ago that she dropped a bill called SB 1150. And the gist of the bill was that it would require all signatures for marijuana for any initiative, all signatures for any initiative for the state of Idaho or referendum would have to be collected within the state of Idaho on Idaho soil. And the clear target in this bill was to stop us from gathering signatures at the pot shops in Ontario, Oregon, where hundreds of Idahoans go every day to shop for legal marijuana. Now, that bill made its way through the Senate with little opposition because the Senate was pretty hardcore anti-marijuana this year. But when it made its way to the House, we were able to testify against it. And during the testimony, we pointed out how this would affect so many Idahoans beyond who they were just trying to affect with respect to the marijuana initiative. It would actually affect soldiers. It would affect others who would want to perhaps sign an initiative. And there was a defense given to this by the proponents. The idea from them was that, you know, it's a 18-year cycle to be able to collect signatures in the state, or 18-month cycle to collect signatures in the state of Idaho. And so certainly those people would be coming back at some point to be able to sign a petition. Well, it was pointed out that many of these people that are missionaries, for example, for the state of, or for the Mormon Church, are not going to be able to get there. And soldiers that serve overseas are often deployed longer than 18 months. Let me play for you my testimony originally against this SB 1150 bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, esteemed senators. My name is Russ Belville. I'm a spokesperson for the Idaho Citizens Coalition, and I represent the over 200,000 Idahoans who use marijuana. Here we are once again as the Senate attempts to blow up constitutional petitioning rights just to stop us from putting a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot that 3 out of 4 Idahoans support. First, it was Senator Groh with his proposal to put prohibition in the state constitution.
Could
so
we
no
could we
citizen
just talk to Senate
touch
Bill 1150, please?
So we are speaking about Senate Bill 1150, which is a transparently obvious attempt to preemptively stop us from collecting signatures from the thousands of Idahoans who visit 8 legal marijuana shops in Ontario, Oregon every day, spending $8.2 million per month and gifting that tiny town of 11,000 people with $250,000 in tax revenue every month. At this point, we're just waiting for a bill that bans initiative petitions from using the letter M. Because if you don't think this bill is about stopping marijuana, then what problem is it solving? Under Idaho law, someone who's collecting signatures for a petition has to be an Idaho resident. Someone who's signing that petition must be a registered Idaho voter and therefore an Idaho resident. The petition must be notarized within the state of Idaho by a notary public who is licensed by the state of Idaho. The signature verification of the Idaho voter's signature is validated by an Idaho county clerk against an Idaho database. Where those Idahoans are standing when they sign shouldn't factor into it. A person's constitutional right to propose and pass laws as guaranteed in Article 3, Section 1 shouldn't be dependent on whether there's Idaho soil underneath their feet. There haven't been any allegations we're aware of so far concerning fraudulent out-of-state initiative signatures. As far as we know, everyone who signed our petitions and the ones that came before us were all Idaho residents, because if they weren't, their signatures would be kicked off by the county clerks. All this bill will succeed in accomplishing is further restricting initiative petition rights of Idaho college students who might be studying abroad, Idaho service members who might be deployed overseas, and Idaho business workers who may have extended work out of state. And the idea that, oh, they've got 18 months to buy a plane ticket and fly back and take time off of work isn't going to work for a poor college student studying abroad, might not work for the service member who can't get out of his commitment, and might not work for the business person who's got the extended contract. This is especially egregious when we talk about the power to propose and pass laws. For passing laws, we don't have to be in Idaho. We can do that through absentee ballot. So clearly we recognize the right of passing those laws doesn't depend on Idaho soil. Why should proposing those laws depend on being on Idaho soil? I urge you to reject this bill and to stop attacking the citizen initiative petition rights just because you don't like marijuana. Thank you, and I'll stand for any questions.
And there were no questions. But that was my testimony against the bill. And further on, as people analyzed it, they realized that not only would it be affecting the soldiers and the people working in the military, but also missionaries. And there's a very strong contingent of Mormons in the Idaho legislature that did not see that as a very good idea. So this bill, we thought, had died. And they went on to other issues. But Representative Brent Crane, who was the chairman there in the House State Affairs Committee that you heard interrupting me, Brent Crane came back late in the session with amendments to this bill. And the amendments were specifically for soldiers and missionaries. Basically, your constitutional rights don't count when you leave the state unless you're serving God or your country. So that took a bill that was already quite discriminatory and unconstitutional and turned it into one that was exceptionally discriminatory. In fact, it came to the Deputy Attorney General's attention, who his name is Robert A. Berry. He wrote that the bill would probably be found unconstitutional, quote, because it likely discriminates against an identifiable class of voters without sufficient justification. Yeah, namely pot smokers, namely people that would be crossing the border to sign the bill. So the facade they tried to maintain on the Senate side was, oh no, this, in fact, Patty Ann Lodge, after I had testified on the Senate side, Senator Patty Ann Lodge replied in her remarks, oh gosh, I didn't know. We didn't think this was attacking marijuana. Oh gee, we just thought this, we didn't, the integrity of the statewide process. That excuse was blown to smithereens by Representative Crane when he attached those amendments to it that most specifically showed that it was okay for everyone else except the pot smokers crossing the border. So this is a situation that led to Governor Little vetoing the bill, SB 1150A, last Wednesday, and Senator Lodge admitting that they wouldn't have the political will to try to override his veto. Now, this is where we get to the ironic part of this entire escapade, is that we had never really planned on gathering any signatures outside the state of Idaho. When we first began this process, getting involved with the Medical Marijuana Initiative back in 2020, and it was back in 2019 that the pot shops in Ontario just began opening. And it was July of 2019, they started opening. And as we started to see the pictures of the lines that were forming, we thought, hey, maybe it would be a good idea to gather at some of the pot shops. We went to the Secretary of State's office and asked them about that. And they said, oh, no, you have to collect in the state. And we just assumed that was the truth. I guess we should have done some more due diligence on that one, because it turned out that wasn't the truth. We didn't have to be in the state to collect signatures. But we'd still not considered collecting signatures at any of the pot shops for the fear that they might not want us to. You know, they are making a lot of money, $10 million a month, on the fact that Idaho doesn't have legal access. How willing would they be to have us there collecting signatures to give people in Idaho legal access and take away some of their business. So it was never really a consideration that we would collect signatures in the state of Oregon, or Washington for that matter, for the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act. Until Senator Lodge and Representative Crane specifically tried to discriminate against us. So, in honor of this entire escapade in the Idaho legislature, we have now opened up, with the cooperation of a wonderful, wonderful company, the Treasure Valley Cannabis Company, one of the 9 legal pot shops in Ontario, Oregon, has given us space to set up what is a semi-permanent petitioning station for the state of Idaho. In fact, we have called it the Crane Lodge Idaho Marijuana Petitioning Station. And I will be there on the days I'm not doing this show or working at the dispensary. I will be there at the Treasure Valley Cannabis Company, 560 Southeast 12th Avenue in Ontario, Oregon, collecting signatures for the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act and the soon-to-be-released Personal Adult Marijuana Decriminalization Act. That's right, two different petitions, one for medical and one for decriminalization. And in the past 3 days that I've been working there, volunteering there, I should say, to collect signatures, we've collected 71 signatures, all from registered Idaho voters, because I've checked their registration myself, and from 8 different counties, including 5 different signatures from people who have driven over 4 hours that day, one way, to get to the Treasure Valley Cannabis Company to buy legal cannabis. A 4-hour one-way trip and another 4-hour drive back. That's how badly Idahoans want access to legal cannabis. They'd rather drive an 8-hour round trip to obey the law as much as they can than to have to deal with the black market and all its uncertainties. I wish the Idaho legislators could understand nothing they do can stop the pot smoking in Idaho, but there's a lot they could do to benefit from taxing the pot smoking in Idaho.
Radical Russ here for the Idaho Citizens Coalition for Cannabis. Since 2010, the members of the Idaho Citizens Coalition have been fighting to legalize marijuana in America's last absolute prohibition state. We believe Idahoans deserve legal access to the cannabis plant in all of its forms. Find out more about the Idaho Citizens Coalition at idahocan.co. That's idahocann.co. And find us on Facebook at IdahoCan. You're listening to Radical Russ Radio, because you believe in facts, science, reason, logic, compassion, and nature. And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ. If 2/3 of Americans live where medical marijuana is legal, how can the government say there's no medicinal use of marijuana in the United States? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today in the rant, I want to talk a little bit about how much farther Idaho is falling behind the rest of the nation when it comes to marijuana reform. For the entire Idaho legislative session this year, we had to listen to these anti-marijuana legislators explain how Idaho is the last foxhole for prohibition, and how we had to continue locking people up for marijuana possession because we don't want to turn out like Portland or Seattle or Denver. And it's an argument that gets weaker every year we continue on and see more and more states passing marijuana law reform. And most recently, of course, we have seen the states in the South that have been moving forward on marijuana law reform. And let me just give you an example. This is Senator C. Scott Groh. He's the state senator in Idaho who tried to pass two constitutional amendments, tried twice to put marijuana prohibition in the Constitution so we couldn't pass an initiative to legalize it. And here he is in March explaining why.
So things have gotten a little wacky. Washington is currently looking at decriminalizing. There's another state as well. So the question becomes, well, do we be like all the other states? Do we just kind of sit back and wait and see what happens? And I can tell you what will happen if we do nothing. Idaho will become like all the other states, where we just get a wave or roll over us of out-of-state special interest money that will lead to legalization, because this is a big money issue.
Yeah, it's if the Idahoans themselves don't really want this, it's only going to be the money that convinces them. We're fooling everyone, you see, that we're fooling them all. Nobody really wants marijuana legalization. We're just fooling them. And it's so bad that he actually believes that medical marijuana is just a gateway to eventual drug legalization.
If you talk to folks down there, one of the challenges when you legalize these drugs at all, then it opens the door to all kinds of things. And so when you have a tax, which they do, on medical marijuana, and then the black market doesn't have a tax, I've been told by folks down there that there's more going out the back door of these dispensaries untaxed than out the front door where it is taxed. It's just another slippery slope to the next step, which is recreation.
Now, the state he's talking about is the state of Utah. He's worried about the state of Utah going down the slippery slope. He actually believes that the limited medical marijuana program in the state of Utah, where it's extremely restricted and you got to have everything in blister packs and seals, and he thinks that is the slippery slope to all drug decriminalization. And he was actually challenged on it by one of the other legislators.
But Utah doesn't have recreational drugs, does it?
Mr. Chairman, not yet.
Not yet. Because Utah, any moment now, is going to be the land of recreational drugs. So this argument from these guys that we can't have marijuana legalization because we're going to turn out like Portland or Seattle or Denver, well, it just gets weaker and weaker every time we pass a new marijuana reform in a red state. In the 2020 election, Idaho was on the right of South Dakota, Montana, and Mississippi. All those states, all these conservative red states that voted for Trump, all voted for marijuana reform pretty overwhelmingly. And this week, Idaho is to the right of Alabama on medical marijuana. On Monday, Governor Kay Ivey signed the Compassion Act, that was Senate Bill 46, into law, making Alabama the 36th state to legalize cannabis for medical use. The Compassion Act passed the legislature by a 2-1 margin with bipartisan support. The bill will allow registered patients with qualifying conditions in Alabama to safely access and use medical cannabis with a doctor's recommendation. Now, it's one of these limited bills. The medical cannabis will only be available in the form of pills, lozenges, oils, and patches. Right? No herb, no gummies, no shatter, nothing like that. Pills, lozenges, oils, and patches. That's it. But at least they passed something. State of Idaho finally introduced a medical cannabis bill that was very restrictive like this. It was actually billed as being stricter than Utah's, and they couldn't get it out of committee. Here in Alabama, they're at least putting something on the books and getting the governor's signature on it. And now we have effective medical cannabis laws in 36 states, including several southern states, Arkansas, Florida, Louisiana, and now Alabama. And we used to have Mississippi until also this week. We had the Mississippi Supreme Court issued their ruling that all initiatives were impossible, overturning the medical marijuana there that had won a 73% vote as well. Were it not for that Supreme Court, we'd have all of the Deep South except Georgia. And Georgia's got a pretty decent medical cannabis law, too. So when you take a look at the map, then, the 11 states that were part of the traitorous Confederacy that waged war against the United States to preserve their chattel slavery of kidnapped Africans, those Confederate states are now all more liberal on the issue of marijuana than the state of Idaho. Oh God, we wouldn't want to turn out like Birmingham, Alabama. We wouldn't want to turn out like Biloxi, Mississippi, or Bossier City, Louisiana. So let's just run it down from the most liberal to the least in the South. Okay. So Virginia is legal for all adults. It's the most liberal Southern state. It's also the most Northern Southern state. Coincidence? I don't know. Arkansas has a medical marijuana law. Pretty good medical marijuana law. People can get flower there, I believe. Florida, medical marijuana is legal there. And they had a legalization initiative that had gathered already hundreds of thousands of signatures. But again, red state Supreme Court, Florida Supreme Court recently killed it because of some technicality about the ballot language, not saying that it would be federally illegal still. Like, people don't know that. Alabama, they've got medical marijuana, but it's a non-smokable, the one they just passed, non-smokable medical marijuana. Louisiana has a non-smokable medical marijuana law, but they've got a bill to legalize smokable medical marijuana. And I don't know if it's passed yet. And another bill to decriminalize marijuana altogether, even if you're not sick. Georgia. So the rest of these states, they don't have a medical marijuana law per se, but they've got one of these CBD oil laws, medical CBD. And in those states, they actually call it medical marijuana, but we know better. It's medical CBD. So in Georgia, Georgia's got the most liberal CBD oil law in the nation. It allows up to 5% THC, not 0.5, up to 5% THC. You can actually get a little bit of a buzz off that. 5% THC, so long as it has at least 5% CBD. So you got to have more CBD than THC. It's got to be at least a one-to-one mixture, and you can't be any more than 5% on the THC side. The Carolinas, North Carolina, you can have CBD oil that's less than 0.9% THC. That's three times greater than the federal hemp limit, 0.9% THC, as long as it's greater than 15% CBD. So a really high CBD to THC ratio. South Carolina is kind of the same. It's less than 0.9% THC, greater than 5% CBD. And in both the Carolinas, they do have medical marijuana bills filed in their legislature that they're currently working on. I think South Carolina is stuck now and won't happen until next year. Tennessee, they've got a CBD bill, less than 0.9% THC. And there is a bill to expand that program to offer it to more than just epileptics. That's at the governor's desk right now. Mississippi, even though they lost their medical marijuana law because of this ridiculous ruling by the Mississippi Supreme Court, they still have their CBD law, less than 0.5% THC in their CBD oil, and that's legal. And again, usually for epileptic kids. And then finally, Texas. Texas has a law with less than 0.5% THC, but the legislature is currently looking at increasing that to, like the Georgia law, increasing that to 5%. And there's a bill in Texas right now to decriminalize adult possession, even if you're not sick. So there you have it. All 11 states of the former Confederacy are more liberal on marijuana possession, on medical marijuana, I should say, than the state of Idaho, where anybody is going to get busted for possessing marijuana. And by marijuana, I mean anything that has THC in it. Literally, in the state of Idaho, if you measure THC in something, that thing is marijuana. Even hemp that's defined as less than 0.3% THC is marijuana in Idaho if you don't have a hemp license for it. Even full-spectrum CBD oil that is legal in all 49 states is considered marijuana in the state of Idaho, and you can still go to jail for it. Idaho, when you're to the right of the South on anything, you're doing it wrong. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Stay tuned. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio is coming up. We're going to talk about the Idaho Office of Drug Policy on drug testing, non-unanimous convictions upheld by the Supreme Court, a so-called Romeo and Juliet story, and why the cops love illegal marijuana. For everyone here in America's last absolute prohibition state, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.